Great. So I know that I do get criticized sometimes by people say I work too hard, doing two jobs, three jobs, four jobs, whatever. Because some of those jobs, really just a week ago, just 8 days ago, came back from a long trip from San Francisco, and come back and give the Friday night talk, do a lot of other work, start a meditation retreat, doing so much. But is that a problem? I often remember just somebody of the training we got as monks under Ajahn Chah. Because sometimes that occasion when, I'll only say it in brief because many of you have heard it several times, that when he finished building the main hall in Wat Bopong and there was so much earth left over, that he asked us, the monks, especially the junior monks, to move that earth with wheelbarrows and spades, even though he could have afforded to hire an earth mover. But I remember he said afterwards, you know, to hire an earth mover costs money when you had so many monks who would work all day for two bottles of Pepsi Cola. But anyway, it wasn't just for that. There's sometimes when you saw something good happening, you just really wanted to be part of it. You know, you wanted to give and help the people who have helped you. And of course, I recall just even the first time I had a deep meditation, and I wasn't a monk yet, that one of the first things I wanted to do was to find that teacher and kiss his feet. It was weird, just out of gratitude. There's someone who's given you to such meaning and such purpose and such understanding, such happiness. The gratitude was huge. I was very fortunate I did not kiss his feet, because I probably would have caught some terrible disease. So please, don't you try kissing my feet, because I haven't been wearing shoes today since I came in the car. I don't know what bugs you might get on my feet. And anyway, that's what I felt, the beautiful gratitude. And part of that gratitude, you know, meant that if Ajahn Chah asked me for anything, I just, yeah, please, let me somehow pay off that. But it wasn't paying off my debt to my teachers. I'm going to go on to that in a few moments. But it was just, it was the way he taught us. You can actually go to a lecture on Buddhism and you can learn all of the suttas and the Pali and this theory and that, but actually doing it in practice, reality, real life, and that was very powerful. People say, oh, this is nice theories. What's that got to do to real life, whatever real life is? But anyway, and this was when we had all this earth to move. For 3 days we had to move it. And this was, you know, not to be lessened. It was in the jungles in those days. The villagers and the villages and the houses were still a long way from these monasteries. And it still had, I still remember they had a wild deer in that monastery. And little by little, the wildness started to disappear as that part of Thailand became more prosperous and more people. But certainly in the early days, it was quite remote and wild. And so there was huge numbers of mosquitoes in that monastery. And so that, you know, you just had to endure them. As you were pushing these wheelbarrows through the sticky, hot jungle. And it was all day and most of the night. They had these, no electricity, but they did have these hurricane lanterns. And they would be pushing the wheelbarrows just by that light until you could really see no more. And even Ajahn Chah had enough compassion to say, okay, call an end to the day. There are a few Thai people here. One of the first Thai words which I learnt as a Westerner was the word lurk, which means stop working. And I always remember that word because I was waiting for it again and again. Come on, just enough. And so sometimes it was too late, it was too dark to have a shower. So you go to your little hut and lay down, sweaty and dirty, and just fall fast asleep because you're exhausted. And in the morning, start off again with the arms round, and then one meal of the day, and then working again, because there's a lot of work to do. For 3 days I worked hard. Do you lose out when you work hard? I thought I was, because I had all these ideas of what a Buddhist monk should be. And even now, I was telling somebody just at the in the reception area before coming in here, never in my wildest dreams, when I became a monk, would I think I would be sitting up here just having my photograph taken and signing books. I mean, that's really weird. But I have to do that so much that I have to prepare for it. So every morning when I get up, I do my 10 push-ups. To get my smiley muscles in order. Especially when going to places like Indonesia. Which I must admit, you are the number one of photograph takers, although Hong Kong is not that far back, far behind. As honestly, that I talk about weird stuff. I can always recall, I think this was Guinness Book of Records, smiling, taking photographs, after giving a talk in the Polytech University in the Jockey Club auditorium, and then just afterwards, it must have been very well received because people were asking me many questions and signing books and having my photograph taken. And all I wanted to do was to let go in the toilet. And you don't know how hard it is for a monk to actually to get to the toilet. It was probably, I'm not exaggerating, I think maybe 1 hour from getting off the stage and people stopping me, asking me questions and signing books. And it's a nice thing to do. But finally, at last, I got to the toilets, the male toilets. And it's not just single cubicles. It's like this whole little rooms, and there's many cubicles in there. And of course, just by the entrance is where people wash their hands before they go out. And there was this young man, one young man, he was washing his hands as he'd just done his business, but he didn't care about my business was not yet done, because he dried his hand and turned around, "Oh, Ajahn Brahm, I really need to ask you a question on my meditation." And I was bursting. But out of compassion, another few minutes wouldn't hurt. So I was asking questions even in the gents' toilets. Oh, this stories, that one thing leads to another anecdote. And that was coming back, and I think that was coming back from the United States, giving some talks several years ago, from transiting through Singapore. Unfortunately, in those days, I knew many people who worked for Singapore Airlines, and so they had access to go, you know, in the transit area, you know, where people are coming off their flights or going to their new flights. And I thought I'd just come out, you know, from the plane and find some quiet place to relax. But all these people welcomed me, and it was inside the airport. And they sat me down and they gave me a cup of tea, which was nice. But they never gave me any silence or solitude. They started asking me questions and trying to find out that when I was free to come to Singapore to give a retreat or do a talk or something. And I thought, this is too much. I'm jet lagged. I'm tired. I need some time for myself. So I thought, aha, one thing I can say is that I really need to go to the toilet. And they let me go. So I went inside the toilet in Changi Airport. You know what happened there? As soon as I went into the male toilet, they always have like a toilet attendant there, all the time. And he turned around to me and he said, "Ajahn Brahm." I thought, oh no. "Can I ask you some questions?" And I thought, why is it every time you try to escape, you can't? Somebody stops you, they come up to you. But one nice thing there was just the toilet attendant, this old gentleman, and he was very sincere and just asked me all these very important questions for him. Maybe I was busy, but for him it was important. I always remember that. It doesn't matter just, you know, that you really wanted it. You can wait for another few minutes. And you know, afterwards, you know, he said, "Oh, can I give you a donation?" I think, this is a very poor person, just another person working in the toilet. So he got out about 20 Singapore dollars or something, which is a lot of money for a toilet attendant. But I said, "Look, you know, I'm a Buddhist monk, we don't receive money." He said, "Oh, really?" I said, "What can I do then? You know, have you got an attendant?" I said, "Not in the toilet, I don't bring my attendant in the toilet." And so, just, you know, on the pieces of paper which you wipe your hand, he had a pen, and I just wrote down the address of the Buddhist Society of West Australia. And I thought, no, he'd just throw that away. But you know, about a couple of weeks later, a nice little envelope arrived with a $20 check. No, $20 notes in it. When I found that out, when the admin, the people here, the secretary, they said, "Oh, you just got a $20 donation from a toilet attendant in Changi Airport." And that caused me so much happiness. Because there's a poor person. And he went to such trouble, actually, to give that $20. I had to put it in an envelope and send it. And I thought, wow, that was really worth just, you know, the pain of having to pull off going to the toilet. For someone who obviously just was really respectful and wonderful. So sometimes that when, you know, you do these 3 days of pushing earth, and then what happened, you know the story. I thought it was finished. At last, and I don't mind doing a few days of labour, you know, to help my teacher. But then what happened was, he left for another monastery. Just like, you know, I go overseas, or other people, Ajahn Brahmani is just, I think, over in Norway now. I think he's coming back soon. You know, our monks, we do travel, we share, you know, our sort of whatever we have for others. So I go to Indonesia, or go to Biff. And it's a really weird name, Biff, because in Australia, Biff means punching people. But that's Bodhinyana International Foundation. So it punches the Dhamma. But anyway, when you go to those places, that, you know, you're away for a while. And sometimes people go and say, "Can I see Ajahn Brahm?" "No, he's over in Hong Kong or somewhere." And that's just our life. But anyway, that Ajahn Chah was away. And of course, the second monk, he said, "No, I think we put the earth in the wrong place. We'll move it." And, you know, he made sense, what he said. You know, when you look, there's a point to that. 3 more days of hard work. But again, I don't mind working and sacrificing and giving. It's my way of doing dana. You know, of showing some gratitude for all these amazing things which these monks have taught me. And they taught me stuff which, you know, you can't get in universities. You know, just ways of looking at life which just change your whole attitude and just change your life and empower you to share those wonderful gems which aren't just like words of wisdom but ways of acting for other beings. So thank you so much for all these great teachers. And so after 6 days I was still happy I'd been able to serve. And then of course what happened on the 7th morning, Ajahn Chah came back. He scolded us all. He said, "I thought I told you to put the earth over there. Now you put it over here. Move it!" And to this day, I'm sure they planned that, the two monks, because it really worked. I was just so upset. My expectations were shattered. I was tired, I was dirty, I was smelly. I hadn't meditated for 6 days because I was busy working, helping Ajahn Chah and this, the other monk, Ajahn Liam, as it was. But after 7 days, that was it, that was enough. I lost my faith. So this Ajahn Chah, he pushes it too far. I never became a monk to be a labourer. If I wanted to be a labourer, I could have gone to some building site in London somewhere. I didn't come here to push wheelbarrows. I'm a monk. I'm supposed to be meditating or learning Pali or reading suttas, doing something which is monk-like. And of course, you know, being angry is not monk-like. I never noticed that. But then this great young monk, and again, I often say I don't know who he was, but you know, I'm probably going to kiss his feet as well and catch some terrible disease, because the things they teach you. He just came up to me, he saw I was upset, and he said, pushing wheelbarrows is easy. Thinking about it is the hard part. And have you ever had those experiences that somebody says something, just goes way inside, and it changes your whole life? Just having jet lag and giving a talk, teaching a retreat when you're supposed to be sleeping. Sometimes I don't know, maybe I am sleeping when I'm teaching a retreat, but I don't notice it. At least no one's complained yet. But I've snored. And actually, this was true. I saw this once. It was this monk in Thailand. I spent the range with him. I wish I could get this on a video at the time, because it was weird. He would give these talks and he'd fall asleep in the middle of the talk for about 5 minutes, and he wouldn't know, because as soon as he woke up he continued the sentence, and if anyone did record it you would not know, because it was continued. It was like he went sort of unconscious, but his brain sort of just paused and it continued on again. So if it was recorded, it would look like just one continuous talk. It was weird. There must be some sort of psychology behind that. But anyway, it wasn't nice for us, because he fell asleep. We didn't know, sometimes he'd sleep for half an hour, sometimes only 5 minutes. And we thought, should we go to the toilet or should we go to sleep as well? But then if you tried that, just when you're about to leave, he woke up and caught you out. I wish we could have predicted him. But anyway, for Ajahn Chah, that, you know, we had to work. He said, no, it wasn't Ajahn Chah, another monk. Pushing wheelbarrows is easy, thinking about it is a hard part. On your life. Now, what are you doing in your life? Where does the suffering, the trouble come from? It's always thinking about it. That's the problem. You've hurt somebody. Going up to them and say sorry. Can you do that? Oh, no, I can't do that. Thinking about it, you'll never be able to do it. Just do it. You have to go up to someone and say just how much you care for them. You know, I mean, not sort of romantically or something, because that, you know, might get you into big trouble because your wife is sitting next to you. But just like caring for somebody. Thank you, President Dennis, for sort of sacrificing yourself and just being a president again. Well, you should be retired by now. So thank you, Dennis, for all the service and all the friendship you've given the monks over all these years. And thank you for all these great committee members, you know, who just work their butt off. You know, sometimes what happens behind the scenes, you don't realize the times, the sacrifice, the hours which people give to keep this place working. And all of the cleaners and stuff, it's very easy to criticize. Oh, there wasn't enough toilet paper in the toilet this evening. It's not the person didn't put enough toilet paper in there. It's too many people had too much SHIT. So we ran out of toilet paper. That's what Ajahn Chah used to teach me. He said, it's not that, that's right, what was it? There was a gentleman, this is an old Thai story, and he was walking through the forest and he saw this hole, and at the bottom of the hole was this treasure. And so he reached into the hole to try and get the treasure out. He reached and stretched, but his arm wasn't long enough. And so he just, after a lot of trying, he had to just leave the treasure and go away. And as he was going away, he met this other gentleman coming the opposite direction. And he said, "Oh, you know, there's a treasure over there, but, you know, my hand is too short, and your hand is short, your arm is too short either." And the other man looked at him and said, "What do you mean the hole is too deep and your arm is too short?" So the other man just got a stick and hook the treasure out. The arm is never too short. You can always extend the hole. That's the wrong way around, isn't it? You can extend your arm. So it's just looking at things in another way. Oh, the work is too hard. No, you haven't got enough peace and wisdom and endurance. Give it a time and it'll work out. So little by little, I realized that, you know, this, what they gave me over there, you could do anything when you just did it and stopped worrying about it too much. And the whole of life, just totally different. You know, sometimes, like other people, when I was a young man, I used to fantasize about what I would really be as a monk. And I always wanted to be a hermit. You know, I did actually 6 months of solitary retreat, didn't speak to another human being. And the monks know that, that's true. And that's, I thought, that's what a monk should really be. And many times I tried to do that, but you know what happens? I was in this monastery once, and there's a big, so it was actually Vaisak Day. And people would come up to me. And they would, I thought, okay, I could speak Thai well enough then. And I thought, I don't mind sharing some Dhamma teachings with them and talking with them and telling about meditation. But all they asked me is, "Oh, what country do you come from? And what does your father and mother do? Have you got any brothers and sisters?" And that was it. And then they went away. It was weird. And you don't mind doing that after a few times. But it comes again and again and again. What country are you from? What did your mother and father do? How many brothers and sisters have you got? And I thought, what's that got to do with you? But they kept on coming up. So this was another monastery up in the north of Thailand with these great limestone caves. And I'd already been there a few weeks. I knew all those caves were. So I'd explored them already, so I decided to go into one of the deepest of those caves. And it really was a deep cave, and you had to go up a bamboo ladder and turn this way and turn that way. There's many other sort of passages there. You had to know where to go to the very deep one. And it was actually, I don't know how this was happened, but it had good air in there, so you didn't get asphyxiated. I've been in there many times before. And I found this deep cave. And I thought, great. Now I can have some peace and quiet at last. Such was my expectation. Every time I have an expectation, something happens and it goes wrong to teach me a lesson. So as I was sitting there, only about 5 minutes, maybe 6 at most, and I heard a sound. You don't have animals going in those caves, and it's very clear it soon was human beings. The villagers. And I saw, because they had the twists and turns, like a light get brighter and brighter and brighter. It was the lantern they were carrying to navigate through the chambers of this cave. And it got brighter and brighter, and I knew what was happening. The villagers, they were also really bored with the sermon that day. So they decided to go and explore the caves. And they were exploring the cave where I was. And I thought, this is just really just bad luck. But there was still a chance for me to escape and have some peace and quiet. Because as they came just down one chamber and they turned the corner, where at the end of that chamber, that's when I was meditating. And one of the villagers, they looked around and they were afraid.
And they went back. And I could hear them talking. And one of the villagers said, there's a ghost at the end of the tunnel. Because they never expected to see me. And they're like a white monk. You know, that maybe that was a ghost.
And I thought, yes, yes. And then, of course, people are scared of ghosts, but they always want to have a look. So at a safe distance, two villagers put their head around and went back. And then they had this discussion. No, it's not a ghost. It's a Western monk. No, it's not. It's a ghost. I saw it. No, it's a Western monk. No, it's a ghost. And I really should have gone, but I wasn't that sneaky at that time. I'm sneaky these days. So what happened was, like, about two or three of them came out. I had a quick look and I could hear the conversation. No, it's not a ghost, it's the Western monk. So a whole heap of them, maybe about a dozen of them, they came around and they sat right in front of me and they asked, how many brothers and sisters do you have? What country do you come from? And you realize that you can't control the world or the nature, and just thinking about it was the problem. Just doing it, just answer the question, and they got to know where you're from and what your mother and father do, and then they leave you alone, then you can meditate. Trying to escape was a problem. So sometimes we face up to life as it is, and that's actually how we learn to find peace in life. I don't know what you have to do in this life, but I also do remember that time when, because there was a very nice invitation to go to Medan in Indonesia to help another temple raise some funds, but honestly, you know, I just go out so often that I get into big trouble every time I go out from, because I've got to look after the monks and the nuns and all sorts of other things here. So you ask the people here and they just really get upset if you kidnap me and take me to another country, because that means I can't be here. So because of that, this nice fellow, and he said, oh, can you please come and help out in Medan, you know, to help our temple? And I said, unfortunately, just you can't. But, you know, all the time when I get these invitations, I thought, well, what am I doing that for anyway? That was not in the job description when I joined up. And sometimes it's really weird. Even when I was in San Francisco, apparently lots of people came to Berkeley. So I was told they came there because I was a crowd puller. And I had my photograph taken and went on TV and stuff. So why did you put me on TV for? I'm an old fat monk. Haven't they got any more attractive hot monks in Berkeley? What about Ajahn Brahmani? He's Norwegian and he's tall. Don't tell him that, otherwise I get in trouble when I get back. So, and then that's something I just cannot get my head around. You know, why? Why me? But then sometimes it's just, you know, you relax, you smile, and that's what people want in this world. That wisdom, but with compassion and kindness. Because apparently there's not very much of that around. People who can just be kind to you, and you can feel that kindness. You can actually sense that softness, even if you don't say anything, because I can't speak the language. And talking about Medan, that was the place. It's in my CV, if ever you want to hear it, where the first time I went there, the venue was so overbooked, I caused a traffic jam. The police complained that people couldn't get to that central area of Medan because the traffic was snarled, and I was the cause of it. And the other time they said that Lady Gaga was giving a concert on the same night in Jakarta, and I got more people coming to my concert in Medan Her ticket sold out in, I think, 10 minutes. My ticket sold out in 5. And is that weird? Why is that? So it's not sort of, you know, just, as Dennis always says, skiting and blowing my own trumpet or whatever, but I want to find out why that is. And just, you know, even this, you know, just working so hard, but when you help people and you find people, they say, thank you for coming. Thank you for helping out. Thank you for even just restoring my faith in even Buddhism or religion, because I'd be an atheist if it wasn't for you. I lost my trust in sort of monks who always want to do ceremonies and just ask for money and are criticizing others, or religions which argue with one another. I try my hardest to actually create friendships between religions. And even here, just very happy that during this time when the monks aren't here, we certainly have an imam coming to give a talk here, a Muslim. Please come. Listen. It's not being converted to one particular religion, but learning how to understand one another and be at peace with one another, respect one another. That's a beautiful thing in this world. And I'm just going to repeat that story, which, you know, when this person, he was a theologian, probably the most famous theologian in Australia alive today, is Father Frank Brennan. And I know him because apparently the Australian government, they recognized, you know, he was a very strong intellectual, very learned, and they wanted him to lead a panel to create an addendum to the Australian Constitution of Human Rights. And he was the one chosen. So he was a very, very intellectual, very wise, really someone who was like a heavyweight. So, you know, when you ask me a question, I give a funny answer sometimes. You know, just like one of the questions at the retreat in Jhanagrove a couple of days ago. One of the questions they asked, can you please explain the importance of patience? And I said, I'll let you know tomorrow. You know, I do stuff like that. You know, but there's a time for the funny stories. But then, you know, this was an important question. And, you know, I do have an audience. And so why not use that audience and those questions and the answers to actually not just to make a point of superiority that my religion, my faith is better than yours, because that leads to so many problems in our world. So I was fortunately that it rose to the occasion. If I didn't rise to the occasion on that anecdote, I wouldn't be telling you about it. All the times when I fail and say stupid things, I usually keep them quiet. But this time, I said something actually quite wise. And just, you know, not sort of planning it, but the person sitting next to me was the abbot of the Benedictine monastery in New Norcia at the time, Abbot Placid. And he was a really good friend, because he had a really wicked sense of humour, like me. And to explain why our friendship, that we were invited once to St. George's Cathedral in Perth for the ordination of Bishop Kate Goldsworthy, the first Anglican bishop in the world. And so that we had an invitation there, and just as the three of us, the Uniting Church minister, or the moderator, Abbot Placid and me. And I know, I think it was Williams, Miss Pennell Williams or something. He's Ron Mutton here. What's his first name? Williams or something. He had really long white hair. Not Steve Francis. No. It was, I think, a later one. But anyway, he was also a really good friend. So the three of us were in the pew. And we called it the Heretics Pew. Because everybody else was an Anglican. And
You know, if you ever go to an ordination ceremony, we have an ordination ceremony for the bhikkhunis. That's actually on the, was it the 17th? No, the 20th or something. Anyway, we're actually ordaining two more bhikkhunis, the Dhammasara, soon. Remember what? Anyway, that's coming. Have a look at the website. Now, ordination of 40 ordained Buddhist nuns, that's really good fun. Breaks in between and running commentaries. But for the ordination, please excuse me if anyone's listening to this from the Anglican Church, it takes 2 hours of ceremonies and stuff and singing hymns and goodness knows what else, which I can't understand. But so we spend, the three of us, telling jokes. And I said, we were just like naughty children at school, but because we were leaders of our respective churches, no one could actually punish us, but we really deserved to be sent out or sent into the corner, just naughty, naughty abbots. But we had, you know, we're human beings and we really enjoyed one another's company. So anyway, in this particular case, that when Father Frank Brennan asked me, he said, what is the Buddhist idea of God? And of course, you know, there's so many answers you can say, we don't believe in God. You know, there's no creator, it's all karma or whatever. But then answers, they may be correct, but they're not right. In a sense that they just create more divisions and arguments in this world. So, I decided to try another angle. And I said, look, this fellow sitting next to me, Abbot Placid, I've known him for such a long time. We've had great discussions. It's really important, you know, if you are really seeking after truth, you don't just follow your friends. You know, have a few people who are different than you, so you get a different aspect, a different understanding. They challenge you, which is one of the reasons why it's great you come here during the rains retreat. You don't hear Ajahn Brahm or Bamali or Ayahasapanya. Something different, actually, to really challenge and see a bigger picture. And of course, if you really are confident in your path, of course, there's no fear at all. Oh, that's really interesting. I can use that in my path. So anyway, that I said, Abbot Placid had always been telling me, again and again and again, and often I disagree with him, but he says one of his basic beliefs, which is one of the foundations of his life, especially as a teaching abbot, was that everybody was searching for God. That's what he said. Now, straight away, I could have been offended and say, no, that's not true. I'm not searching for God. I went past that a long time ago in my search. Don't go there. Instead, I said, this is what he says. I'm going to respect what he says and try to get inside of his point of view instead of just rejecting it. Try and actually really embrace the other so you can understand something which you haven't seen before. So I said, well, if I take that on board, then what have I been searching for all my life as a monk? What have you been searching for? Why do you come here and spend Friday nights listening to me or whatever other monk or nun is teaching here instead of staying at home and watching the football or whatever else is on the TV or going for a nice dinner somewhere? Why do you come here? Because people, they want peace. Peace in their heart, peace in the world, peace in their family. You want respect. And there's so many people in this world, they don't get any respect. You may be of a different race, a different sexual orientation. You may be emotionally ill, the mental diseases. You may be sort of slightly deformed or having a very difficult life. Sometimes there's so many people who are stigmatized, who are different, who are misfits. And many people, they do, all they need is respect. And I've seen so often, especially like going to prisons, or going to see people who are emotionally different, who have so-called autism, I say so-called, ADHD, schizophrenia,
all these so-called labels which separate you from the mainstream. And they don't get respect. And that's one of the big problems. Bring people in, respect. And then, so that's what people are looking for. You want to be respected. Yes, you make mistakes. We all make mistakes. You may be different. That's one of the great things of the Buddhist society here. I don't know how many different races we've got in this hall today. You know, lots of nice Indonesians and Hong Kongese, Chinese, English, Parsis. I don't know what else you got here, but pretty much just about everybody. And it's wonderful that we can come together with mutual respect for one another. And also, what else do you want? What else are you searching for in life? And to be understood, and deeply understood. It may even say, you know, to have the privilege of loving somebody else and receiving that love. The unconditional love. We have a partner in life or a friend, and you can talk anything to them. It's trust. And sometimes by talking to your closest, most intimate friend or partner, you can discover things about yourself and go deeper in to know who you are and what you think about life and your meaning. Go so deep inside. You'll never be able to do that by yourself. And you feel embraced, safe, not criticized. You feel understood. And the ability to give that to another human being as well. Meaning. So in this world, whether it's after a day, a week, or a year, or a life, you feel you have made a difference. Your life has not been in vain, just eating up the resources of this world or the resources of others and just indulging. But you've actually made a difference. That the world has been a better place after you've walked, you know, through its paths and corridors. That's a lot of things which people are searching for. Maybe some more. You can add those things. So I said that if my friend says everyone is searching for God, and everyone is searching for those things, then that must be what God means in Buddhism. Peace, respect, kindness, meaning, love, friendship, lack of fear. Ability to contribute and serve and make it a better place. Or your town, your family, the world a better place. If that's what you're searching for, and everyone's searching for God, then that must be what God means. I know Father Frank went, oh yeah, that's pretty good. And getting praise like that from a Catholic theologian, I thought was very wonderful. But it's not just getting praise just because we like praise. It's getting some meaning as well. So that is where, you know, just thinking about it is the hard part, but just doing it. When people ask you tough questions, don't just think about it. Just let the mind become peaceful and see where it leads to. That is one of the reasons why that all the wisdom, the truth, the kindness, the love, whatever it is, you know, it doesn't come from the books. And it comes from stillness. I suspend some of the things I've been taught. Just push them aside and let something else come up. There's one of the retreatants over in Jhana Grove has on their bag, or it could be their t-shirt, I'm not quite sure. It can't be their t-shirt, it's too cold this time of year. It must be their bag or their jacket. Never allow your learning to stand in the way of truth. I like that saying, which I just came up with just straight away, and I think I was actually teaching some members of Buddhists who were members of the British Army serving in Iraq. That was really weird. I get into some really weird places sometimes, but I like that because it challenges you. So all the learning you've had, They were learning about Buddhism, about Christianity, about politics, about race, religion. I don't know what you've learnt in your life. But sometimes that learning is not strong enough, wise enough, deep enough. And when you are silent, you get a far more reliable sense of what truth is, what meaning is. That's why one of the advantages I always say of Buddhism is we do rely on books and scriptures and stuff, but the scriptures teach us how to be still and how to feel our heart, and from there to know reality, to know truth. And you always know it's truth because it has a certain flavor or fragrance to it. It doesn't divide people. It doesn't divide you. It doesn't divide you from the other people you get to meet in this world. It doesn't divide you from sickness and death and all the negative stuff. It allows you to be with these states. It's actually to be at ease with them, believe it or not. Things which can otherwise confront you, you make peace with. You understand and realize every aspect of your life does have meaning. It's important. Things which you rejected, just like the old the old dung simile. You know where that dung simile came from? I was telling a few people about that at the retreat. In the north of Thailand, in Medang district, up in the mountains, I found this idyllic monastery and had a beautiful cave, and I love caves. And I spent so many lovely hours in this cave, and it had lots of bats in it. The bats were no quiet most of the time. Maybe they'd flutter when I went in there, but I found quiet places to sit and meditate. And anyway, to this day, the smell, the fragrance, I call it fragrance of bat shit, is one of my favorite smells. And that's no exaggeration, because it's associated with a wonderful time in my monk life. But not only that, it was just right outside the bat cave, there was a papaya tree. And that was the papayas I ate from that tree were the sweetest and juiciest I've ever eaten in my life. And they make all the other papayas you can get in the shops over here just, you know, even the papaya is good for you. And I don't mind eating papaya, but this papaya was absolutely delicious. And of course, you know why? Because all of the bats, when they left the cave, they would poop right outside the entrance of the cave where the papaya tree was. And when they actually came back again, you know, before they went into the cave, they'd poop there as well. So that papaya tree had so much bat poo inside of it that the papayas, they were really juicy and sweet and just incredibly tasty. And that's where I got that simile from, about the truckload of dung. And how just, you tread in the bat, not the bat poo, you don't have so many bats in Perth, but you have lots of dog poo in the park. People try and actually to pick it up on the roads. You get it on your shoes, always take it home with you. It's valuable stuff, and dig it under your mango tree, your apple tree. If you've got papayas, beautiful. If you do dig it under your papaya tree, please remember, and just it's good karma to share the food with the monks. It's delicious. So this is actually where you see that sometimes we can be so negative in this world. All the trials of our life. The cancers, the arguments with the people you really love, and your husband, your wife, your kids, all those difficulties, all more dog poo for the mango tree or the papaya tree. Look at it that way. It all belongs to life. Nothing gets rejected. So you never ever think that something's gone wrong in your life. You never actually think that there's something wrong with you. It's all important stuff where you learn and grow. And living life is easy.
Being a monk is easy. Traveling all over the world is easy. But when you think about it, that's the problem. Just do it. That's the talk for this evening. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
I've been teaching all the people from Hong Kong and Indonesia how to do the three sadhus.
Really put energy and effort into it. Okay, there's some questions and answers coming up now. Anyone got any? Because people from overseas always get preference. Anyone from here wants to ask a question? Okay, so overseas wins. So what have we got here from overseas? Very good. Okay. First of all, from Donald Trump. Oops. That's just getting your attention. Okay, where's it gone? Oops. How can we practice stillness, acceptance, and letting go without it becoming an excuse for laziness, complacency, and not giving your best? Look, you practice stillness. That takes a lot of skill. It takes a lot of energy to learn how to be still. Laziness, you move around a lot, you're not still at all. This is cultivation of your mind to learn how to be still. The total opposite of lazy. And also, when you're really still, you get energized. Stillness is not dullness. Stillness is what creates what I call powerful mindfulness and superpower mindfulness. You really get awake, happy, penetrating, and whatever you do in your life, it's amazing what you can perform. When I was in San Francisco, I was meeting the publishers of my books over there. And I told them how I wrote that first book, Opening the Door of Your Heart. Because somebody tricked me into writing it, so I decided I committed to writing it. The first 54 stories, or the 108 stories in Opening the Door of Your Heart, I wrote in 2 weeks, 14 days, 1 hour every afternoon. That was all. Just 1 hour. And I think a few people have actually seen the manuscript. I think it's where Cecilia's got it right now, Dennis. Museum, and it's a boom, well, it deserves to be, honestly, because it's almost perfectly written. You've seen it, Dennis. Yeah, it's hardly any mistakes on it. It was written by hand. And it was just a story, it just flowed. I didn't interfere with the train of thought. Just 1 hour, story just flowed, the next one flowed. Written with a pen, hardly any mistakes, and I had to get somebody else to type it out. And when I looked at it again after so many years, I said, wow, did that happen? And it happened because you learn how to let go. You're so still, the things flow. I had a break after 2 weeks, and then another 2 weeks or so, did the second half. And you had acceptance and letting go, but then, of course, you had to get it published. How do you publish a book? I wasn't well known at all then. So, it was just put onto a disc, a CD disc or floppy disc, I don't know which one is which. And then, just before, I think that's Friday evening, because I think I went to Melbourne on a Saturday. And as soon as I arrived in Melbourne, the first talk I gave was in Melbourne University. And after the talk, this lady came up to me, unforgettable name, Magnolia Flora. And I met her again recently. She's over in Melbourne. It's just very nice to catch up again. And she came up to me and said, I work in the publishing industry. I never went to look for anybody. I'm in the publishing industry. If ever you want to have a book published, I'll be interested. And I just gave it to her straight away. And when you're still, you don't need to struggle. It's not laziness, complacent, not giving your best. Stillness creates your best. Anyway,
How can I really feel peace? What does it feel like? That's a wonderful question, because it just shows just how people can spell the words, they can want the words, they can feel they're creating peace in our world, but they don't even know what it feels like. I really commend you for your honesty there. So instead, there's a little technique which I'll do now, and I'll ask everybody to participate. You can just even look at the floor or close your eyes and just see what happens, especially K G in Germany. So, close your eyes and just understand your mind, or just be mindful as I'm saying these things. Peace. 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 But what happens is that every time, you can open your eyes now, every time you mention that word, whether you like it or not, you may try and resist the first few times, but your mind actually goes towards the meaning of peace. It's like a signpost, which after a while you just follow. Peace. And after a while your mind really goes closer and closer to where that word is pointing. And you start to feel peace. And once you can feel it, you don't need to say the name anymore. You actually have it right here. And that's how you feel peace. You get to know it. Not as the word, not as an essay, but it's essence, what the word points to. And anyway, what does it feel like? Hopefully that I could give you a path so you know what peace actually feels like. And anyway, lastly from USA, what is the physical reminder to slow down and be present other than breathing and not running? I get distracted and start thinking while doing them. So usually they say that death is nature's way of teaching you to slow down. It's a bit late then. The physical reminder to slow down is again just a little bit of mindfulness and just a little saying like the one which I wrote in the opening to opening the door of your heart is grant yourself a moment of peace and you realize how foolishly you've been scurrying around. When you actually have something to judge or to compare the life we're leading running around, when we have some moments of peace, and you grant yourself that moment of peace, then you wonder, what have I been running around for? How foolishly you've been racing around. Pointlessly, without any benefit. We always think we have to do this to please others, but you're kidding yourself. And you're being part of a problem, rather than doing something different and showing a different meaning and way of living your life. Slow down. And you find you get to the destination, probably even faster. But anyway, the point is not getting to the destination. It's the journey you make, the path you make. When we just go fast, all we're thinking about is getting to the end. Dennis was actually saying beforehand that the was an amazing race, was looking for volunteers who were Buddhist. I don't realize if they were real true Buddhists, I was going to volunteer for the amazing race when people told me what it was, where you get prizes for getting there first and solving the clues. And if that was me competing, I would actually give all the clues to my competitors. You get there first. Can I help you get there? You would totally stuff up the meaning of the game by kindness and selflessness. Because even in the Mahayana tradition, the amazing grace, the bodhisattvas say, I will not enter enlightenment until the last blade of grass gets there first. So does the amazing race really want a few bodhisattvas? Because they will never reach the goal. So instead of amazing race, amazing stillness, amazing compassion. Then I'll put my hand up for that. So anyway, so that's the physical and mind to slow down, to enjoy the moment. Don't really consider the destination. The destination will come to you. You enjoy the moment. Be slow. And then you'll find the truth. So anyway, there he goes, a few suggestions. Eddie? Oh yeah, what would the talk be with a question from Eddie at the end? Thank you, Eddie.
Oh, Ajahn Brahm. Oh, what a beauty. Very nice talk.
Ah, very
Ajahn Brahm, when you talk about stillness, does that include calmness too?
Indeed, that when you are calm, you slow down, that leads to stillness.
Oh.
So everything stops.
Now what came to my mind, is the Buddhist understanding, you know. It says about the pond of water. When the pond of water is still and calm, we can see the reflection of the moon, you know.
Yes.
And the surrounding stools, you know.
Indeed.
So if it's like a disturbed and cloudy, then it's muddy, you know, it's muddy.
Distorts reality. So, what do you think of your wife? What do you think of your husband? As soon as you start thinking, the pool of water is distorted. And so you don't get an accurate picture of who they really are. That's pretty cool, isn't it? Okay, so I think that's enough for the night. All the Hong Kongies and stuff, they've already gone. So they're going to get back to China Grove before me. So anyway, so I wish you a very happy race retreat. And of course, if the monks and the nuns are still over in their monasteries, so please go and visit them. I have to say that, because otherwise we'll be so thin and hungry after 3 months. Maybe that'd be a good thing for me. But anyway, please look after one another. We'll see you around soon. So let's bow 3 times to the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Excellent, yeah. So we can bow 3 times and then we can do what we need to do.
Arahaṃ sammā sambuddho bhagavā punaṃ bhagavatam abhivādhemi suvākato bhagavata dhammo dhammaṃ namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghaṃ Namāmi.